you're 21 or older, consume nicotine or tobacco, and want to join the Black Buffalo herd, head over to blackbuffalo.com to learn more. You can order nicotine pouches online. They ship directly to most states, or check out their store locator to purchase pouches at thousands of retail locations around the country. Black Buffalo Tobacco Alternative, bold flavor, full pouches. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Black Buffalo products are intended for adults age 21 and older who are consumers of nicotine or tobacco. Turkey hunting is one of my favorite things. And one of the key tools I use for turkey hunting is the Onyx Hunt Map. I use it incessantly when I'm hunting turkeys. Being able to find a new piece of public or gaining permission on private opens up opportunities for gobblers. Onyx Hunt has a special offer for you this spring. Use the code MEATEATER to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt. You'll find more birds this season. I'm telling you, I rely on Onyx Hunt when I'm hunting turkeys. It is an invaluable turkey hunting tool. You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without your essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. Man, I was just in Hawaii and I had my Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie with me. And here's the deal. We're in and out of the water all the time, getting in to go spearfishing, getting out, taking the kids to the beach. I'm not going to mess around all day putting sunscreen on, then having to get washed off. I just run a hoodie. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug-bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
Presented by First Light, creating proven, versatile hunting apparel from merino base layers to technical outerwear for every hunt. First Light. Go farther, stay longer. Okay, we're recording in Ketchikan, Alaska. Me and Seth are doing this one like, you know who John Lennon is, right?
Yeah.
Got shot, Beatles and everything.
Yep.
You know his wife, Yoko Ono?
I don't know.
You're not aware that there was a dude named John Lennon with a wife named Yoko Ono?
No, I am that. You asked if I knew her. That's fair.
No other. Anyways, yes. Me and Seth are doing a, what was that? Evan, do you remember what that was called? Where they wouldn't get out of bed?
Where they wouldn't get out of bed?
Yeah, they did like a bed in. They wouldn't leave
yeah,
bed?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
It's me and Seth right now in this hotel bed.
Exactly. Yeah, it's exactly the same. John Lennon and Yoko.
Yeah, and they wouldn't get out of bed, and they did everything in bed. It's like me and Seth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joined today by Evan Hafer. Now, you don't know this probably. When the pandemic hit, you were our first remote, the first ever remote person.
That's right. I did, because you told me that when we were on the show. You said, I hate this. I don't like doing them like this, and I can't wait to get back to doing them in person.
And here you are.
And here I am.
How did you like the title of that show, Roasting Coffee and the CIA? That was a good title, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I'm sure it did really
well. I don't know
really
if it's
well.
True or not.
Well, it was, because I was technically in the CIA and roasting coffee. So I don't know if that's the entirety of the show, but it was...
No, but I liked it. I thought the title was good.
It was really good.
But I had questions about whether that you might come to me and be like, well, actually, I didn't do that then.
No, I did.
Excellent. Yeah. In Ketchikan, Alaska, coming after, off of some wet-ass days. And yeah. We'll talk more about that, hunting black-tailed deer on Prince Wales Island. And we'll return to that. We got a couple, as usual, we got some stuff we got to cover off on. I'm gonna mess with my order. Because, Dirt, can you explain what happened to your friend, man? The bear guy.
Oh, he...
This is a great story. This is a real, you know...
Happening.
Makes its own gravy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think we're on the same page. The
tranquilizer guy.
So my buddy Kevin Wiederman.
How do you know it's not that good of friends, huh?
it's a hard last name. Anyways.
Well, which one is it? Or don't you know?
Wiederman. Yeah. He was hunting up at the family cabin I was telling you about.
Well, don't give away his spot,
dude. No.
Oh, okay.
We'll stay at that. And shot a bear, and at the check station, FWP said it had been, it had, it was collared, and they realized it had been tranquilized 20 days prior and told him not to eat the meat.
Okay, but hold on. I wish you would have.
Oh.
You got to the point real quick.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to back up a little bit. Did he know it was collared?
No, he couldn't tell. And he told me that when I talked to him. He's like, couldn't tell.
Why not? What color was the collar?
I don't know.
Couldn't tell it was collared.
Mm-mm. Or tagged. Maybe it was an air tag. I don't know.
Okay. And then was it tranquilized and moved or tranquilized?
Yeah. It was a trouble.
So he shot a lost bear.
It was relocated.
No.
Yeah. And this was all, initially when I texted you, it was a text with what I asked you. And then I called him before our flight out here to get the gist real quick. And that's all I got was, yeah, man, couldn't tell it was whatever.
And they said, we tranquilized this bear 20 days ago. You shouldn't eat it because that tranquilizer drug is in there.
Yeah, they recommended 30 days to wait 30 days. And before that, not to consume the meat. And he didn't.
In 10 days, it would have been okay to eat the tranquilized bear.
And his intuition was to eat the meat. But
sure,
he knew I ran with some folks that knew a lot about that type of stuff. And he said, ask your buddies, you know, what they think. And I asked you and Cal, and both of you guys were like, eat it.
Dr. Steve.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want someone coming after me. I don't want to.
Well, now you might be.
I don't want to eat the shit and then coming after me later.
Held accountable.
Did he feel sleepy or something?
No.
What if he eats it and feels sleepy?
I don't know.
Do you ever listen to this show, the show you're on right now?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
So maybe you caught the episode where we talked about a guy that was shot by a tranquilizer.
I didn't listen to that.
They were doing mountain lion research stuff, and they wanted to trank a mountain lion, but they didn't want it to fall out of the tree and get hurt. So the guy was up in the tree with it. Like, they'll put out nets and stuff. They no joke, like, put out nets to catch the mountain lion.
Yeah.
Somehow the lion, like, they hit it, and the lion gets tangled up, like, falls asleep on the branch. So he's got to go up there and try to finagle it down and, you know, get it to the ground. Gets up there, and it's not asleep.
Just
so he is hooting and hollering about getting the gun back up there because he wants to place the shot because it's in a place where they can't get at it. Either way, they come up with an idea to, he's going to lower a rope down, and the guy's going to tie the tranquilizer gun to the rope. I don't understand this, but in the process,
he gets shot.
Of him tying it through the trigger guard, tranks the guy in the tree.
I need to listen to this one.
They had to haul him out of the mountains on a mule.
But he didn't die.
Didn't die.
Interesting.
So,
yeah.
Point being, this is for your friend with the bear.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a man that took the full load
of the trank and was
in himself, and he's lived to tell about it.
Yeah.
So now you got a bear that has some amount of it for how many days? 20 days?
Yeah.
Metabolizing it. It's distributed throughout its carcass. He's going to presumably eat it in a piecemeal fashion.
Yeah.
Totally not like fine. He's going to sit down and eat 100 pounds of, like, in a sitting.
Yeah.
He's going to eat a half pound here, a quarter pound there.
He's a big eater. He's not going to eat it all. But
you see my point, man. Yeah. Like, in times like this, I always ask myself this. I'm like, will this be the thing that ends up killing me?
Yeah. Negative on that.
And I'm always like, yeah, probably not, man. It'll probably be like the normal shit that kills everybody.
What? And there may not be an answer, but why the 30 days, do you think?
Don't know.
Why'd they come up with that number?
Don't know.
Yeah.
It's probably how long it takes to get out of the system.
Check out the brain on Seth over there.
Yeah. Well, I'll follow up. And see
crafty if, little feller.
See if Kev's
laying up in that bed.
All comfy.
He hangs out with Yoko Ono. You know
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good one. Maybe a tranquilizer expert will write in. Oh, so also, Auction House of Oddities. We're on auction group number 4. So we're going to keep running the auction house for a while here. Got a lot of items still. So right now, auction group number 4, We have a signed copy of Ridgeline by two-time podcast guest Michael Punk. So that's his new book, signed. Jason Phelps. Now, get this one. So Phelps just hunted the 2020 elk season successfully. I watched him with my own two eyes. His bow. So he's got a PSE Evo NXT35 stripped of accessories. So you can go buy Phelps's actual elk hunting bow and the actual bugle tube he used all throughout the 2020 season. A well-bloodied bugle tube. The prototype. So we worked with, we have like skull mounts out, like desk mounts, wall mounts. We work with my favorite fabricator, Travis Barton, Barton Fabrication, near our hometown there. We worked with him to make these things, and he came up with like a prototype. We're auctioning off the prototype wall skull mount. One-of-a-kind shit here, folks. We also got a hand-forged carving knife by Kirkpatrick Forge in Sheridan, Oregon. This is one of a pair of knives we had. The other one's gone now. Designed for carving large hunks of meat. Riley Kirkpatrick made this for Callahan to be used on special occasions. But Cal says they're too nice for how infrequently he has special occasions happen to him. So he wants someone that'll be able to put this thing to good use. Also, our very own Maggie Smith, a beautiful photograph of a bull moose. The photograph is called Some Serious Side Eye. It's a bull moose in velvet from our own videographer and editor, Maggie Smith. She was doing a river trip, ran into a bunch of four or five moose. This one struck her. She snapped hundreds of photos of it. This is her favorite one. And then Moss, Montana Moss Agate Hoop earrings. So Spencer the Rock Hound Newharf, our very own, who runs our trivia program here, he found them. His wife turned them into beautiful pieces of jewelry. Those are on the auction house. And then continuing on the auction house, it's something you don't got to buy. Go sign up for a chance to win Das Boot. It's like Dos Boot. So it's the boat from Das Boot Season 2. We already gave away the boat from Das Boot 1. This is the boat from Das Boot 2. It belonged to my childhood fishing mentor, John Gary. When he passed away, it came to live at my house, lived in my mom's pole barn. I moved away. They lived in their pole barn for 20 years. We got it out, refurbished it, put a new Honda 4-stroke on it, got it a beautiful, crazy-ass paint job. It's all tricked out with everything you could possibly want. Dos Boot, up for grabs right now. Go sign up and get it. Speaking of the auction house, we had Skunk Essence. We gave away a bottle of Skunk Essence that that me and Seth and Chester pulled out of some skunks with a syringe. And then it's prompted a lot of people to write in skunk stories. Here's a skunk story. It's not a prank, but it's just a good skunk essence story. It has to do with skunk essence and freedom mounts and furnaces. So this guy goes on to say, he's in Iowa hunting shotgun season, and he finds a large white-tail deadhead. Now, you got deadheads that like the dead, right, Evan?
Yep.
And then you got deadheads that are dead things.
Dead things.
This is a dead thing, deadhead. It's a dead whitetail.
Got it.
He didn't find just a dead deadhead.
Just a dead deadhead.
It's just a deadhead.
Be easy to find. Very colorful. Tie-dyed, more than likely.
Yeah, because if he was getting a skull mount of a dead deadhead that he found,
illegal.
I would probably notify. I'd have to notify the authorities because I don't want to be implicated. But this is a dead whitetail's head. So here's what he does. Doesn't make total sense. He takes the head and antlers and puts it in a garbage bag. Sure, that makes sense. Then he places it in the window well of his uncle's house.
Odd.
Keeping it safe?
Why, yeah.
No. You find a dead skull, put it in a bag, I'm with you. Any 9 out of 10 people are going to bag it. Puts it in his uncle's window well, where it resides for some time. Eventually, the uncle, who owns the window well,
takes the bag with the deadhead into the furnace room.
Mm.
Unbeknownst to him, a skunk is in the bag.
What? Oh.
There was something missed.
Snacking on the rotten head.
That got in there from the window well?
And he grabs the bag. Okay. When the skunk gets in the house and starts cutting loose, it gives his furnace a direct hit.
Oh.
2 years later, when you come in the house, there's still the faintest
skunk smell.
Little whiff.
That'd make you want to just replace your whole furnace.
Sure.
Or the whole house.
It makes me...
Yeah, it's getting a little extreme, but yeah.
It makes me think that it might have been a deadhead that found the deadhead. Because that story...
That would
crazy.
Explain...
That's a crazy story.
Yeah. Could be. That might be a good show.
Right?
Deadheads hunting for deadheads. It's like you have deadheads that walk around the woods.
Nothing's harmed.
And then you follow what they do with the deadheads when they find them.
Windowsills. Yeah. I have a skunk question. Might be a better time than
go
now.
Ahead. No, that's a great time. No time like the present for that kind of stuff, Dirt.
My neighbor's dog, this was right before New Mexico, actually. I was going to bring it up, but I didn't get a chance. Bit off the, attacked a skunk, got sprayed, and when they went out to figure out what was going on, this skunk's tail was with Pintler is the dog's name. Now, does the tail...
Hold on, can you back up? I'm confused.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Dog attacked the skunk.
Okay.
And at the crime scene, they found the skunk's tail and a sprayed dog.
The dog ripped the skunk's tail off.
Yeah. So my question is, does the tail regulate that action? Like, was it a loose cannon at that point? Just...
Right. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Honest question.
Like, yeah. Cutting the nozzle off a hose?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is a skunk just, I don't know.
That's probably one for Heffelfinger.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say.
Doesn't regulate.
That's not how he regulates.
Okay.
That tail is almost like, I want to think it's almost like a warning flag because it's so colorful. It's like.
Yeah.
Yo,
when
yeah.
they raise that up, you know, it's time to get the heck out of
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
In fur trap and lore, Seth, you'll have your own thing about this.
Yep.
When I was a kid, in fur trap and lore, when you have a skunk, and they're generally, like in the old days, people would trap skunks for the commercial markets. And they still have value, but now they have value on the, what do you call it? Novelty trade.
Yeah.
Skunk prices aren't tied to fur markets. So they're not tied to sort of like all the international shit like oil prices and what the economy in South Korea is like and what the Russians are up to. Like normal fur that goes into fur garments is sort of tied to all this, you know, political, global, economic shit.
So it's tied to like a company that could be making something specific, like a jacket that ends up being really popular, and all of a sudden the skunk prices might go.
No, it's all novelty.
I see.
The skunk fur market is novelty trade. So it's like your drunk uncle would think it's funny to have a skunk hat. Or people want a skunk wall hanging. It's like it doesn't go. It's like the novelty trade drives skunk prices. So skunk prices stay pretty stable. Like I think like a put up skunk stays around like not much.
What was
five,
that?
6 bucks.
Oh, okay. I was curious.
What was I getting at? Oh. But skunks are a very common bycatch fox and coyote trapping.
We caught a bunch of them coyote in a bunch of coyote sets that Seth and I set this year.
Hence,
yeah,
the bottle of skunk essence.
Yep.
I was always taught that if you shot it in the heart with a .22, that's the best way to make it not spray. Nowadays, people have a syringe on a long stick.
Yep. Trank it?
No. I don't even want to tell you what they put in there.
Ooh.
This is a family program.
My imagination is running wild.
It's
Black Rifle Coffee.
The skunk gets real energetic. Yeah,
it'd be dangerous.
We're done on that, right? Skunks?
Yeah, I guess
I still
so.
Didn't get an answer on the tail, but maybe someone
No, I'm
will.
Telling you, man. I don't think that has anything to do with it.
There's not a muscle?
No, I'm sure that he's got like a... I'm sure that he's got like a sphincter-type, prostate-type thing or another that...
It's got a muscle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Okay.
Is that skunk essence like drawing over someone win it?
Yeah. Garrett's getting ready to ship it out.
I wonder.
You want to know what?
I'd be curious what they're going to do with it.
I don't know. You want to know what Joe Beaver there in Minnesota?
What he does with it?
How they store it? It's a hot tip.
They probably don't store it like you, stuck to the outside of your house.
They don't staple it to their outside of their house. He said what you do is you get like a coffee can filled full of sand.
Oh.
Now there's a thing that's going obsolete. It's coffee cans. Evan could probably tell you all about that. That might be a cool retro product.
Funny you say that. I do cans.
The old type of can that you'd put worms in when you got done.
Yeah. Yeah.
You do?
Or bolts.
We do a aluminum can on some of our limited offerings. Yeah.
So then you can put your worms in there, bolts, or spent casings, whatever people put in coffee cans?
Well, that was part of the genesis because I was out cleaning out my grandfather's shop, and he had all these cans, coffee cans, like everywhere, right? Nuts and bolts. And I was like, they were all the Folgers cans. They're all red.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy drank the same coffee for probably 30 years.
Because he liked to have his garage organized.
That's one of the reasons. I was like, man, I think this business might be kind of sticky.
He reinvented the wheel, man.
No.
Anyways, to store skunk essence and other very potent odors like fox urine or whatever, take a can like that and fill it full of sand, and then you put the bottle in the middle of the sand and then pack the sand on, protects it from breaking, and the odor, he said, the odor doesn't get out of that.
Huh.
It's just packed in sand.
It is a good tip.
Yeah. Here's an interesting deal. Corinne, I could tell, thinks this is super... Corinne's not with us right now, but I can tell she thinks it's super interesting because of how much she really liked a lot. Like, if Corinne finds an interesting thing and she'll highlight the part she likes, holy smokes, she likes a lot of this article. It's about that California condors. Now, I need to know if other birds can do this too. You guys ever heard of parthenogenesis?
No.
Nope.
Okay. Bear with me. At a time that we were down California condors due to, you know, poisoning and shooting and habitat destruction became, you know, like they're very famous for how low their population got to be, where they were saved from, they were saved through captive breeding programs. So in 82, there were only 22 California condors in existence. Okay. Apparently it's hard to look at a condor and tell if you're looking at a boy or a girl. Which is true with a lot of birds. You got to kind of open their cloaca up and you'll find this little wormy thing in there. Anyhow, they developed the test to determine the sex of the condors, and they split these birds up into two captive breeding facilities. As this captive breeding thing went on over the years, they also began doing DNA testing on these birds because they wanted to avoid breeding closely related individuals. Recently now, scientists decided to undertake a complete genetic analysis of the population, which is now, you know, some 900 birds. So from 22 to 900. And they have all these like samples from condors, right? They have blood, they have eggshell membranes, they have tissue from deceased birds, they have feathers from birds. So they're doing this analysis of all these birds. And they find two birds out of the 900. There's two birds that are missing genetic material from the male who shared the enclosure with the female that laid the eggs. You track it, Samantha?
Mm-hmm. This is cool.
You seriously think that?
Yeah. This is awesome.
They did multiple samples off these birds because they felt they were making a mistake. They were confident it wasn't a mistake. What they realize is that condors, at least this couple times, can reproduce through parthenogenesis, a form of reproduction in which an egg can develop into an embryo without being fertilized by a sperm.
Seems like there was an error somewhere.
No, I don't believe so. Check this out. Condors can live into their 50s. But both of the male chicks born of asexual reproduction were relatively small and died before becoming sexually mature at 1.9 and 7.9 years old. Then the article goes on to be annoying.
Wait, how does a female have a male baby without any fertilization?
You'll have to write these people and ask them.
Okay.
Does any other bird do that?
I'm sure it does. Look up that word. Here's where the article gets annoying. And this is the thing that everybody does that's super annoying. Goes on to say, he adds, speaking of one of the scientists, that the condor is a remarkable species that has survived from the Pleistocene era. Everything has survived from the Pleistocene era. People are like, the muskox, a Pleistocene relic. Why don't they say, like, humans, a Pleistocene relic? Or rats, a Pleistocene relic? Or chickadees, a Pleistocene relic?
They're like, a special thing.
No, there's not, like, you can't name a creature that's not a Pleistocene relic.
Yeah.
You can't. Name me one. Name a creature, like, from the Pleistocene-Holocene transition. What brand new things are there?
Got me.
But why is it always the muskox, the Pleistocene relic? No one's ever like the white-tailed deer.
Pleistocene relic.
It's like everything is.
That should be the next t-shirt. You'd have just like a bunch of pictures of...
Dude, it'd be like a dude. It's a shirt with a dude.
Pleistocene relic.
Like it looks like a just a dude like me. And it says Pleistocene relic.
Yeah. That's what we should have a t-shirt.
Oh, you'd
of
sell
Steve's,
that like hotcakes, man.
Steve's face on a t-shirt that says Pleistocene relic.
I don't know if I want to be the person on it, but I think it'd be a great shirt.
With the glasses down. Yeah. It's a glasses down Pleistocene relic. Yeah.
Like when I'm like when I put my yeah, when exactly. I pull my spectacles to the tip of my nose.
Can see near and far.
You do a special fish hack edition where they're all fogged up. Well, are condors special other than being Pleistocene relics?
Well, they're special, but there's only 22 of them left. Now, they're also the condors also sit at the, and this sort of ties into a thing I'm not going to spend too much time on. It's a little bit ugly, right? It gets a little bit ugly. So, if you were to go and ask, I'm getting into the deep end of the pool here, Dirt. This is where
like
biology meets politics.
Oh, I don't like that.
Lead.
Yep.
In hunters are often blamed for continuing condor deaths. Other people point up other causes of lead, but condors have a lot of problems with lead poisoning. Some people point to that they're getting the lead from scavenging carcasses left over by hunters, and they're ingesting lead, and they live to be 50 years, and over the course of 50 years, they find enough deer carcasses and get lead. Now, like for, it was in the 80s when the lead ban came for waterfowl. Everybody got pissed. People eventually got used to it, but like you used to be able to shoot lead at ducks and geese. There were people that quit hunting ducks and geese because they had to switch to steel, non-toxic shot. California had like the condor recovery zone, and you couldn't use lead ammunition in the condor recovery zone. Even like 22s and stuff, you got copper. This article, like a lot of articles like this, they always take like a little pot shot at hunters, and so the article goes on to take a little pot shot at hunters about this thing, and it's like I'm not going to get into it right now. There's people we should have someone on to talk about it. there is some healthy debate about this. Okay, where the lead comes from and all this. And some people would some people view that that's not entirely to blame for the demise of the Condor and all this kind of stuff.
But it splits politically in some ways.
Yeah, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
So Pat Durkin on our website recently wrote a thing about increased use of copper ammo, right? And what's going on in California where it like they can't use lead anymore and like and certain ammo is hard to find right now, as you know, and it like exacerbates the problem and people are very frustrated, all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Gets into, you know, Durkin's thing gets into that a little bit. But it got me thinking, when you say like when you're watching a Western, and they fill them full of lead.
Yeah.
Garrett Long, our colleague, has a quote, when there's lead in the air, there's hope in the heart.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Will you in the future, will you be like, I filled them full of copper?
Yeah.
When there's copper in the air, there's hope in the heart. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be a hard transition, man.
Yeah. And what's copper going to do to, you know?
Well, this one feller, Corinne thought it was interesting, but I don't think it's that interesting. This one feller wrote in about all the trouble with copper.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Endless.
You know why? Because I'm not totally prepared to talk about it. Because there's like studies, that, for instance, everybody points, there's a lot of stuff that people are like, I don't want to use, like move away from birds for a minute. Now, it's not even a debatable point. Waterfowl, a lot of waterfowl got killed by lead shot. It got killed by lead shot for this reason. You have areas where you have a lot of hunters in a concentrated fashion putting a lot of pellets in the air. Mm-hmm. So you have marshlands, wetlands, crop fields where guys are shooting boxes of shells, right, all the time, and those birds pick up grit for their gizzard. And so you're in areas where there's like a lead pellet of a size very attractive to the bird as digestive grit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you have concentrations of it in areas where birds concentrate. And so they would accumulate lead in their gizzard. And their gizzard grinds that lead up, and it was causing bird death.
Yeah.
But then a lot of things cause bird death. Cars kill birds. House cats kill a billion birds a year in the country, and people aren't like, we should ban house cats.
Oh, I'd be
right.
Yeah.
Wind turbines kill birds.
Power lines.
Skyscrapers kill birds. Glass windows kill birds. And people aren't like, we should ban glass windows. No more windows.
Yeah.
So, you know, some people look and be like, well, why of all the things that kill birds, why is it that the we got to give our thing up? You're not giving your house cat up. You know, all this kind of stuff.
It's complicated.
It is. And then the other part, the other reason we should almost have it be where we should have a debate. That'd be a good idea. Get like one person from one side, the most informed person on one side of this, and the most informed person on one side, and they go toe to toe. Friendly though,
with time allotment.
Oh yeah, we'll run like a debate, man.
Yeah,
it's a great idea. You can come, Dirt.
All right, I'll do the button pushing.
because there's things like, for instance, some people will cite like I quit hunting with lead because I don't want my family exposed to lead. But then no one can find evidence of hunters having elevated lead. In fact, they did this one study, I think it was in the Dakotas, hunters have less lead than average because they live in rural environments.
Yeah,
right.
I got some.
And when you're in an urban environment, like you can go in a second, you're in an urban environment where you have huge concentrations of automobiles that were burning leaded fuel, and it's like in the soil, and in old housing areas that had lead paint that you can't point and be like, hunters are at risk of lead. You'd be like, Brooklynites are at risk of elevated levels of lead. So, you know, there's all these arguments like human health, wildlife health.
Yeah.
It's a rich field of inquiry. And no matter what answer you come up with, someone's going to be pissed.
Yeah.
Hey, man, after years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if you've learned anything, it's that there is always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, I thought, well, what's the catch? But it turns out there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/meateater. That's mintmobile.com/meateater. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/meateater.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Being prepared is all about having the right tools. The OnX off-road map and navigation app is the best to find off-road trails and off-grid camping, and to use fully functional GPS when you're out of service. And as we all know, that being out of service is usually where the best places start. Plus, there's color-coded public and private land boundaries, which are super handy for finding off-grid camping. And I said it before, but I want to make sure it sticks. Offline maps. What this means is it allows you to access all interactive land and trail data and custom map markups when you're out of service. Just download the map ahead of time. Your phone's internal GPS gives you full navigation capabilities offline, so you'll always know where you are and how to get home safely. I've been using OnX for many years. I use it, I'm not joking, on a daily basis. There is zero hunting I do without OnX. Go to onxmaps.com and use code MEATEATER to get 20% off your membership today. Rain or shine, every day is a great day for fishing, right? And you probably got rain gear, but you shouldn't overlook sunny day gear. Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite Hoodie has you covered on the sunniest day. Man, I was just in Hawaii and I had my Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite Hoodie with me. And here's the deal. We're in and out of the water all the time, getting in to go spearfishing, getting out, taking the kids to the beach. I'm not going to mess around all day putting sunscreen on, then having to get washed off. I just run a hoodie. I mean, who wouldn't trade a sunburn for a trophy fish? But why do it if you don't have to? Especially when this Solar Stream Elite hoodie is built with broad spectrum UV protection. We're talking UPF 50, and it has airflow, so you don't overheat. And what's the alternative? Putting down the rod every half hour so you can slather on some sunscreen. Seems like an easy choice to me. So if you're going to be spending long days out on the water, and I sincerely hope that you will be, head on over to Columbia.com/PFG and shop all of their performance fishing gear.
Go ahead, Dirt.
As left-handers.
Yeah.
I mean, you. I don't know, if, Evan, are you left-handed?
No, I'm normal.
Where's this going?
So three of us in the room being left-handed. Normal. Babe Ruth was left-handed. Do you remember when you used to write stuff on paper? That doesn't happen anymore in school, but left-handers.
No, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, you actually don't.
Left-handers,
you don't have kids.
No, but they're on iPads and laptops, aren't
Listen,
they?
Listen, man, I'm telling you, I have three of them. They write on paper.
With pencils? Lead?
Yeah, pencils.
Are any of them left-handed?
It's not lead, it's graphite.
Never mind. Was old pencils lead? But the smudging.
Yeah.
Like the
sure, it smudges, but it's not lead. It's graphite.
Okay, never mind. Disregard.
I was excited for you to get there.
Yeah.
I was rooting for him. Yeah. When he starts talking, I'm always rooting for him. I'm always hoping he's going to pull something off, because a lot of times he does pull off something good, man.
That is graphite, dang it.
Well, they did.
They could have.
There was lead in pencils,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there was lead.
It has to have been, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Think about, as a young child, writing them essays, getting the smudge on your hand, absorbing that. Maybe left-handers have a higher percentage of lead. Mm.
Of graphite poisoning?
Graphite poisoning.
You ever end up like licking it off to clean it?
No, I just smudge.
Yeah.
No. Anyways.
Is that what you do, Chet?
No.
Lick it off?
Explains a lot, doesn't it?
Chester, here's a good one for you, buddy. ready? Some Wisconsin. You ready for something from Scotty?
Yeah. Hit it.
A diver. This is great. A diver was going to test out some scuba equipment. Okay. Picks a nondescript spot to test his scuba equipment. What does he find in 30 feet of water? A 1,200-year-old fishing canoe. Lake Mendota.
Whoa.
Wisconsin Whoa. Lakes.
Wow. Right near Madison, which is kind of, if you think about how popular that lake is, it's right in Madison, and they still are finding stuff like
there's
that.
There's a picture here. It had fishing weights on it and some other equipment.
Really?
Isn't that wild?
That is crazy.
1,002. So from 800 AD.
What was it made out of? I may have missed that.
Lead.
It's graphite. It's a wooden canoe.
Wood, yeah.
I wonder if they talked about their fishing canoes like we talk about our fishing boats these days.
It looks like it's kind of lashed together
with
something.
What's the beam on that?
You see that?
Yeah. They might have done that to hold it. I think what you're looking at there.
Hold it together.
Cheddar is they didn't want it to fall apart.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That is crazy.
It is cool, though.
1,200-year-old canoe.
Lake Mendota.
Some kids in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, there's pictures of this sitting in school. Speaking of little kids in school, bam! A moose busts through the window. There's a bunch of pictures of the moose standing in the classroom.
What?
Yeah. Right on into school.
Anybody hurt?
It's a messy-ass classroom.
Saskatoon.
Oh, geez, yeah.
Looks like a lot of blood on the ground. Unless that's, I don't know.
Water bottles. Sanitizer, it looks like. There's a hand sanitizer bottle there.
There was a bear that got into the Bozeman High School a few years ago.
Yep. Okay, Chester. Got some stuff on Chetiquette. You ready for this?
Oh, sure.
A lot of people writing in with Chetiquette questions for Chester.
I love it, too.
I kind of want to read this letter, but it's so laden.
I'll read it, but I'm going to
do effing.
Nah. Oh, yep.
All right, I'll read it.
No, how do you want to read it? So let me lay the groundwork. Burbank, Washington. This just happened, October 27th. Three youth hunters got up in the morning and beat what looked like an older gentleman to his duck blind. So they were, racing to get there. The guy that wanted to get there to the blind first but didn't get there goes and touches off four rounds near the kids, storms off. They got scared about what was going to happen. So then they packed up their decoys and went back to their truck. And what awaits them on their truck window, Chester?
There's a letter. who wants to do the beep when I point at him?
Sam. Oh, you know what? Let's just do this, man. Just read it. And then, because it's really something.
Every line has a...
I mean, yeah. I imagine there must be a dozen of them in there. Mm-hmm. Some of them, he doubles up.
Okay, I'll read it.
Phil will do it.
Okay.
Phil will make it more...
This is the letter left on the truck.
More this is from the old man. This is the old man's... And this, okay. He needs to have his mouth washed out with soap. With soapy water.
Yeah.
It just... This drives me nuts, but I'm reading it. This is my f***ing spot, asshole. My grandpa built all the blinds on this shoreline. Next time I see this truck here, the truck is mine. You best watch yourself, boy, and stay the out of Burbank. You are very lucky I don't slash these tires right now. Off.
Ooh, jeez.
I don't think I've ever heard you say that word before, Chester.
That I was no, gonna beep.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean,
jeez Louise.
Obviously, in etiquette standards, that's not
that's downright rude.
That's just plain old nasty. And
you're talking about the kids taking the blind, right?
No.
Yeah, Chess is like these kids need to
kids these days taking old guys' blinds. No, I mean, like, there's a couple questions. Like, I'm sure this is public land. You know, if it's public land, people have to just, and you see this all over, you know, I've gotten letters from people being like, you know, get the hell away from this spot and whatnot. But if it's public land, it's everyone's right to hunt it. And, the other day, speaking of just duck hunting, cause these guys were hunting, Seth and I drove to a spot near Bozeman and we got to the spot and there was a dude who was parked there and he left a duck decoy under his tire. And I think that guy left that duck decoy there so people would know he was duck hunting. It's a small little spot, and you just
have... Hold on a minute. I'm sorry. I was reading something. What now?
So Seth and I drove to a duck hunting spot the other day. There was a guy parked in that spot.
Oh, and he had the decoy.
And he left.
That is a great idea.
He left a duck decoy under his tire so people would know he was duck hunting. I think that's why he left it there. He could have just forgot it, but it is a good idea. So, like, if it's Seth and I idea. Showed up yeah. at that spot in the morning, it's public land, you see a guy parked there, you know it's a small spot, give him some space. Like,
yeah.
go somewhere else in that particular area. It was like a one little pond, you know, you can't hunt, you know.
Did you guys slash his tires?
We left a very similar note.
you should just photocopy that note and then leave it blank where it says Burbank. And then I don't know what means. Does he feel, did you think that man, the kids were Hispanic? Is that what that is?
That's a racial slur for sure.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah.
Oh, he needed to twist the knife a little bit in the end there and get like...
It sounds that
that's what that I couldn't tell what the hell that meant, but that's what he means.
Yeah, I mean, or this book is definitely.
Jeez, man.
Yeah,
it's people just got to stop being such assholes. Really, like
I didn't even when you were reading that, I didn't even get that he had like a little racial slur in there to finish her off.
If you don't want someone hunting your duck blind, don't put it on public land.
Yeah, and if you're gonna get that bent out of shape. From something like that, why are you even hunting?
Yeah.
Is that enjoyable for you?
Well, I wouldn't trust him holding a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a little unstable, I think.
kick his ass.
This is
I know, I was going to say, they need to have a bunch of people waiting for that dude when he comes back.
He's the most riled up I've seen him the entire trip.
He takes Chetiket very seriously.
Yeah, someone's got see like, the veins popping in his forehead. He's getting angry.
Just
you
riled.
Take it serious.
It was clear though in that it was public land. I wasn't.
It's not clear, but I'm.
If it was,
it's,
yeah.
it's gotta it was, be.
Of course it is.
Yeah, I mean, and if it is, there could be this guy who wrote this note. He could be doing something illegal by building blinds and leaving them there. So we don't even know that. But
He is going to be in violation because all states have one. He's in violation of his hunter harassment law.
Yeah. And to me, that's not even like an etiquette thing. It's just kind
it's
of like
an etiquette thing. That's a good slogan for the book. It ain't etiquette. It's a etiquette.
Yeah. Anyways.
So are you going to put like a blind etiquette session in there section?
Yeah. Yep. Sean Weaver is helping me out. Said he would like to help me out with the duck hunting stuff.
That's great.
And he could shed some light on that.
That's great. In there, I think you boys ought to put in there a little bit about sky blasting ducks that are working someone else's spread.
Oh, yeah.
That's got to go in there.
That's not very good etiquette. Chetiquette.
But there's a part of it, not that you're not a crafty little thinker. There's a part of it that's going to be, it's almost like there's a sort of magic to it of that you're not going to be able to spell it out clearly.
Oh, yeah.
Like, for instance, we used to always spend the opening day of duck season in the Muskegon Marsh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As did a lot of people.
Big marsh, similar to like the Horicon Marsh where we grew up.
But all those people, it made the duck hunting good. Like, you got limits, right?
Because they're pushing
because
them
the birds were just flying all day because people were coming and going, whatever. but you'd go out and you'd still have to find an appropriate spacing based on the idea of the density of people that were in the marsh.
Yep.
If you went later in the year and it wasn't opening day, you would never, and there weren't that many people out, you would never hunt as close to another party as was acceptable on opening day because of how many people were out. And yep. It's hard to explain this stuff.
Yeah, it's hard to articulate that. It's like a big part of this is like try and use some common sense and be respectable. And that's like one of the only...
Very hard to explain.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's probably regional too.
Yeah, but I think, you know what would be a good way to do that is talk to duck hunters that we know in different states and kind of get an average of kind of what they're all saying and how to say it. And I feel like you could get something in there.
Yep. You know what I think you shouldn't put in the book?
What?
Because it wouldn't be applicable to enough people. But there used to be a thing in muskrat trapping where if, let's say you have a November 1 muskrat opener, public land, guys would go out ahead of season and start staking their sets as a way to claim. So you'd go to a feed bed,
yeah,
put your stake. Go to a house, put your stake. And they pre-stake it.
Yeah.
And in their mind, they're claiming it.
Yeah.
But there would be nothing preventing you from coming in and wiring off to that stake.
Sure.
Tell your specific story to that. I remember you were saying where it caved in on his trap that was there.
Oh.
Or is that not?
I had to talk a guy out of beating my ass when I was in high school. So I'll tell you right where this happened. I'm not going to say who it was, but I'll tell you where it happened. There's a highway called M120. If you look on a map, find Twin Lake, Michigan, and find Holton, Michigan. M120 between Twin Lake and Holton crosses a thing called Cedar Creek. There was a undercut bank, which is like mink like to run undercut banks. They want to protect themselves from raptors and stuff lives under there. Frogs and crayfish and stuff lives under. So they're always running undercut banks. Common mink set is to just bed your trap so there's a half inch or an inch of water over the pan right up tight against the wall of the undercut bank because he's going to be running along there. I go up to a nice looking undercut bank and I'm digging out a trap bed and find a trap. Not recently dyed and waxed. No tag on it. I think it's a trap from years past. I put it in my pack basket and I make my own set there thinking I failed to mention this. It was sprung. And it was like down deep sprung. So I thought the bank had caved in, whatever. It was long, old trap. I placed my own tagged trap in the exact spot. So these two mink trappers thinking alike, I placed my own tagged trap right there. I can't remember if it was that day or the next day. I'm at a spot making a fox set. And up roars. Like this, like driving like he's in the Baja 1000 up to me. Doesn't go to me though. Goes to my truck. I'm across the field and he's ripping through my truck. Finds his trap, untagged. And then wants to beat my ass for having stole his trap and put mine there.
Yeah.
This guy is huge.
I say.
And I'd be, you know, and I'm like, don't you think I appreciate life enough to where I wouldn't do that to you?
Yeah, but you didn't know it was.
With your, and leaving your info there too.
Yeah, and then I leave like my like business card there.
Yeah.
Holy God, man. Put that in that Chatticat book.
Yeah. But that's another thing. You'd be like, tag your goddamn traps. Because that's the way you should do it, and it's the legal way.
That's coming straight from Chester. All right, Evan. To what degree do you feel like talking, like you're all over in the news, people are sending me like news articles about Black Rifle Coffee Company.
I'll talk about whatever you want.
I mean, I don't know. Do you feel like talking about it?
Sure.
You're all over in the news.
Mm-hmm. On what?
I'm doing my hand gesture. Oh, meaning, go on.
Because
like your recent like news.
Yeah, we're prepping an IPO. So we did a
explain to people what the hell that means.
Initial public offering or IPO is taking a couple company public. We're doing it through special purpose acquisition, which is a SPAC. So we. And there's a couple different ways you can do it. You can do a direct listing or you can do a SPAC. And we went with a SPAC. It was a timing issue. So we've been preparing for this for about 3 years.
Oh, no kidding, really?
4 years. Huh. 4 years. So there's a lot of preparation that goes into this. So I started 4 years ago. Well, rewind, 7 years ago.
You started the company 7 years ago.
I was like...
Can you tell people how you met your wife?
Yeah. I met her in a coffee shop. So,
well, no. You spied her in a coffee shop.
Spied her in a coffee shop and then found her online, stalker level 20.
And recognized that she was by an espresso machine and realized that's the coffee lady.
Realized it and then chatted her up. And
I've been watching you.
She's sporting some guns, trying to do pull some shots on that espresso machine. It's like, that lady's got some vascularity in her arms. She probably likes to run a bit. And I was right. And that was before I started the company. But when I started it, it was, you know, building a big company was never necessarily something that I was goal-driven for. It's more of... Given the circumstance of the size, it would be great to be able to share the success of the company with my customers. That's what I wanted to do from the very beginning. So I've always built it around what I call a self-licking ice cream cone. So
are you going to write a book someday called The Self-Licking Ice Cream Cone?
Follow me here. With the subscription, it was always about delivering, you know, the freshest roasted coffee to people, like straight out of the roaster. As I talked about it earlier with you, was that a coffee has about 72 hours for it to do what's called off gas. So it's expanding through the roasting process, then it stops, and then you bag it, and then you ship it out to your customer, and it has a couple weeks in there that it really tastes good. And so I wanted people to have that. I wanted the customers to see what I saw in coffee, have this like great experience, fresh roasted coffee. That was through the subscription. And I teamed up with companies early on to get discounts for, you know, their gear. And a lot of it was all built around the lifestyle. So a lot of it was, you know, shooting and hunting and things like that with these other brands. So if you join the subscription, you could get a discount with these other companies. It was like, well, shoot, if Federal was one of our early companies that we did business with. So if you took a discount from Federal, there's a lot of guys that spend a lot of money on ammo. Could theoretically pay for your coffee through the entire year. So with that subscription, it was my original intent. And then the second layer of that was to be able to share the profits with the customers as well. So if we grew, your stock goes up, theoretically speaking, between your discounts and stock price, you should be able to pay for your coffee. So that's what I've always wanted. I've always wanted to build it that way. I didn't understand how complex it was, you know, being naive. Well, being dumb when you really start to, when you start to build these things, like, oh, you have to go in and build basically these financial institutions within the company that audit your financials. It's fairly complex and robust process.
Is there a thing that is there a regulatory measure that a company has to hit a certain size and revenue to go public? Like, could someone theoretically take a $100 company public, or is that blocked?
I, you know what? That's a good question. I don't know. I know that when we were very early on, they wanted us to be bigger. because they didn't feel the stock price would perform well if it was not a bigger size company. So they wanted us to hit a gross revenue number before they would do a direct listing or even entertain the idea.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's a regulation that says that you have to meet X, because there's a lot of companies that will go public based on a future possibility of profit. So they don't necessarily even have any profit center.
Yeah, yeah.
So probably not, but that's a good question. I don't know.
So what happens to you now?
Well, in the next couple months, we'll get a ticker. It's all based on the Fed and when they approve it and then release it back. And then from that point, you know, people will be able to purchase it.
Huh.
They can't right now. It's under a different ticker through the SPAC.
Yep.
But then we'll get our own ticker probably February, March, depending. I don't know. It's all based on federal timing and when they're going to sign off on it.
So when you're sitting there watching business news and all the stuff going across the bottom,
mm-hmm.
you'll see BRCC run across the bottom.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah, I've watched it every day since we've announced it, but it's not every day, I guess. Every other day or whenever I was like looking at my phone trying to figure it out.
Being prepared is all about having the right tools. The OnX off-road map and navigation app is the best to find off-road trails and off-grid camping, and to use fully functional GPS when you're out of service. And as we all know, that being out of service is usually where the best places start. Plus, there's color-coded public and private land boundaries, which are super handy for finding off-grid camping. And I said it before, but I want to make sure it sticks. Offline maps. What this means is it allows you to access all interactive land and trail data and custom map markups when you're out of service. Just download the map ahead of time. Your phone's internal GPS gives you full navigation capabilities offline, so you'll always know where you are and how to get home safely. I've been using OnX for many years. I use it, I'm not joking, on a daily basis. There is zero hunting I do without OnX. Go to onxmaps.com and use code MEATEATER to get 20% off your membership today. Rain or shine, every day is a great day for fishing, right? And you probably got rain gear, but you shouldn't overlook sunny day gear. Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite Hoodie has you covered on the sunniest day. Man, I was just in Hawaii and I had my Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite Hoodie with me. And here's the deal. We're in and out of the water all the time, getting in to go spearfishing, getting out, taking the kids to the beach. I'm not going to mess around all day putting sunscreen on, then having to get washed off. I just run a hoodie. I mean, who wouldn't trade a sunburn for a trophy fish? But why do it if you don't have to? Especially when this Solar Stream Elite hoodie is built with broad spectrum UV protection. We're talking UPF 50, and it has airflow so you don't overheat. And what's the alternative? Putting down the rod every half hour so you can slather on some sunscreen. Seems like an easy choice to me. So if you're going to be spending long days out on the water, and I sincerely hope that you will be, head on over to Columbia.com/PFG and shop all of their performance fishing gear. Man, I just got a new truck. Before I even drove my new truck anywhere, I wasn't going to drive it anywhere until I put a deck system in it. That's what a believer I am in decked. I always thought they were a great deal, but now they're even better because they have redesigned their drawer system and storage cases from the ground up. It's like, I didn't know there was a problem with them. I don't know, they seem great to me. Just an improvement on perfection. The new system, made in the USA, gives you 10 to 30% bigger drawers to fit more gear. It's lockable and secure, right? Weatherproof storage for all your gear. You build it right into your truck bed. You still have a truck bed you can put stuff on. The top deck of the new system has 8 D-ring tie downs integrated into the steel. So you have really burly anchor points to hook stuff down on your bed. So if you got to slam on the brakes or take off real fast, nothing shifts. And like I said, they're D-rings that lay real flat. Like, you can still slide stuff right across the deck. It doesn't catch on the D-rings. The D-rings are built in. The drawer system fits any truck or van on the road in the USA from the last 20-plus years. Decked is a game changer. There's no more like leaving stuff at home that you wish you had with you. The stuff I want in my truck is in my truck, out of the way, and secure. Go to deck.com/meateater to receive free shipping. we were deer hunting through a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a welcome distraction, or were you kind of wishing you were like back at Command Central?
There were only maybe a couple seconds I was wishing I was back at Command Central. This is a great distraction, and it's not a distraction. It's a focus, right? I was thinking a lot about that today, where being quiet and then moving through the woods after, you know, blacktail was something I was only focused on that. So not thinking about business, you know, every minute or talking about it or having meetings or something like that. It was a really good opportunity to make the announcement, then come out here, because it was out here the day after. It was really good to get away from all of it, because you can be completely absorbed and quite literally a little bit useless to the entire endeavor. It takes, you know, months if not years for this stuff to mature and then move forward. There's so much work, you're never going to get it done. So 5 days, 6 days, it's not going to mean anything.
Oh, like in the grand scheme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a grain of sand in a beach, right? It's just kind of all absorbs. It feels like it's really important at the time. And I knew that because, you know, there were guys who were like, well, why do you want to go out there now? And I'm like, because I want to go out there and go hunting. And
now
that's why. Like, you don't do this stuff so you chain to it all the time. And plus, you know, you don't pass up an opportunity to come hunting with, you know, Steve Rinella and Meat Eater. You don't do that. Like, that's, doesn't really matter. I would have had to have had some significant family issues that would have had to trump that opportunity. You know, you think about, there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people that would probably, you know, trim a limb to do that, like an individual body.
You mean their arm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't squander an opportunity unless it's just absolutely something, you know, traumatic that's happening in your life, because that's disrespectful to the opportunity ultimately.
Oh man, thank you. That's kind. Let me lay a little groundwork for people, and then we'll talk some, like, your impressions of the specifics. We years ago filmed a few blacktail hunts in Southeast Alaska. So it's Sitka blacktail. You have Columbia blacktails, which live in California, Oregon, Washington. You get up into BC and they switch them to Sitka blacktails. They're a different creature. I mean, they resemble one another, but you know, they have some morphological differences, some behavioral differences. And we filmed hunting them in basically the summer, so August, early September, when they tend to be found up high. They kind of have a reddish coat. They're pretty easy to find, and then these things have a way of vanishing down into the coastal rainforest. And we filmed a hunt years ago where we tried to hit the rut, but went earlier just because of scheduling problems, and had a really tough hunt. And I came away blaming it on timing. Oh, man, we were 2 weeks early, right? But turns out that wasn't as tough as what we had now. And then I picked, if you talk to like really good blacktail hunters, they're as adamant as our whitetail deer hunters in the Midwest say about like first week of November. Like, if you're going to hunt any week, first week of November. It could vary because of whatever, but that's like, if you're going to like go by calendar dates a year in advance, first week of November is when you want to be there. But there is, it's substantiated. There's some lower deer numbers right now. Samantha, you were informed of this by the Tongass National Forest, right?
Yep.
They warned you.
Mm-hmm.
Some low deer numbers. You get all kinds of opinions about it. It seems that one of the more popular opinions about it is wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Too many wolves. Not many deer around. And even places like where I've just in my knockings around over the years, places where I know there to be trails that are generally like pretty beat down trails, struck me as being mossy, not beat down. And it was just, it seemed like just low amounts of sign. and then precipitation. But we had like the great opportunity to wander around in a virgin, old growth, coastal rainforest, which is something.
Oh yeah.
What'd you think of just, I mean, that whole kind of dripping mossy scene there, which isn't totally foreign to you because you grew up in the Northwest.
Yeah, I think we talked a little bit about it because I was stationed out of Fort Lewis and we did a lot of training in Washington State. So it reminded me of, you know, those years. But it's beautiful when you're looking at it. And you're experiencing it, and I think there's a combination of things there, which, you know, to go out and experience the elements the way they are, in this is, you know, it's cold and it's wet and it's green and everything's wet, but to become part of that environment where you get to just experience everything about it, you know, I truly love those opportunities. Like, I don't think that if you're not enjoying the environment because of the moisture, you're not enjoying the entire immersive experience, for a lack of a better definition. So it's hard to get into, you know, lamenting about what you're doing when you're in such a wonderful, beautiful place where everything about it is giving you this experience that you should be, you know, soaking up, for a lack of a better term, like a sponge.
Yeah.
And
instead of wishing it were otherwise.
Oh, I didn't wish for a second it would be otherwise. That would be, there are times.
I get guilty of that a little bit now and then.
Yeah.
We're just wishing it wasn't raining.
Oh, I do. I do. But then I instantly catch myself. I'm like, well, that would take away from the experience.
Yeah. Because the funny thing is as I'm wishing it's not raining, how do I always describe it to people? It's a coastal rainforest.
Right. Yeah.
It's like temperate rainforest. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
And then you go there and it rains. I'm like, damn. What gives?
I was wishing it was otherwise.
You were?
Yeah. Not the rain. I was wishing that you guys had seen more deer.
Oh. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, even that.
Nope. I still wanted to see more deer.
I think that made the story better.
Yeah.
Eventually, because we got a deer. Oh, eventually,
yeah. But it was looking a little. It was looking like, you know, we kept at it. I mean, well, I'll just tell people. We hunted 4 full days, dark to dark. Saw 2 does, and then.
And that's moving nonstop.
Yeah.
Moving, calling.
Yeah.
Moving, calling. Like. Hunting,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Up high, down low, in between.
Yeah.
It was tough, man. You spent a bunch of time in the military. And I always, like, maybe it's not true, but I always imagine the military, the people who excelled in the military have, like, developed, like, a level of discipline that I don't have. Mental discipline that I don't have. But I noticed that you... Would it just be like against your upbringing to have complained or brought up that we weren't seeing things?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's just not something you're going to do.
No, never.
I started after a few days. I'm like, I don't think he's going to do that.
Nope. No.
I'm glad he's not going to do it.
No.
And I don't think he's going to do that.
No. It goes back to the whole thing. Like, this is a, you know, this is an incredible opportunity, right? And I was explaining this. I think it was yesterday or something like that. Like, you know, you're part of American history at this point, right? You and the brand and the people that you bring in, you're part of American outdoorsman history. So for me just to sit out here and get the opportunity to go out and hunt with you, I would be foolish, if not like really remiss to, you know, cherish this opportunity and say, man, I get to hunt with Steve. Like, how many other people in America, like going back to that same point I was making, want to do that if not internationally? So, you know, I get to watch you in your environment as an American, you know, outdoor icon, and then get to share several days with you in this, you know, incredible place where, regardless of how much it rained or, you know, if you're cold or whatever it might be, like that's part of it. Like I get to, you know, live those 5 days. Like what an incredible gift. And so if I would have been like, dude, we're not seeing a lot of deer, that's not why I'm here. Yeah. I'm not here to do that.
You don't say.
Yeah, no shit. You know,
it's like, oh, you wish you were seeing more?
Yeah, like master of the obvious. You've been like, yeah, no shit. You're not seeing any deer. So it's, you know, it is. It's hunt. It's hunting. And, you know, I've had a lot of really cool life experiences that, you know, and this will live up there with those experiences. You know, so for me, it was just like, yeah, hey, we're hunting. This is great. So dark to dark, great. Extend the daylight. Let's walk a little bit more. Let's have, you know, have a little bit more time in the field, because it wouldn't be the same if it wasn't really respected. So, you know, that's one thing that is, you know, truly thankful for. And I thank you guys for really inviting me, because it was an incredible time, and I really can't thank you enough for allowing me that opportunity, because it's incredible.
You know, I can sit here and say that the more I think about it, I if you don't count a dead one,
yeah,
I never did see a buck.
No. Yeah.
We were set up calling, and Dirt said he saw the flick of a tail.
Yeah.
200-300 yards away from the trees.
Heart stopped.
Yeah.
And I could tell by his like demeanor. I could tell by his demeanor that it was true. And then attention was focused in a way that I couldn't see. And I could. It's funny because I can just like see you, Evan. And I could read by your like whatever posture. I could read you seeing it. I could read you. Knowing that there would soon potentially be a shot opportunity, I could see through your posture the shot opportunity present itself. And I never saw the deer until he walked up on it. But it was like I was watching it. Just by watching sort of like the muscle tension or something in like, I'm like, that is the sort of physical tightening of a man who just saw deer.
I'll go back to something, which is like you said, there's like a level of discipline, right? Where you're talking about like the level of discipline that, you know, some guys in the military get if they're, you know, they're professional soldiers. I think, you know, any person that comes to that, I would say fractions of a percentile within their profession, it takes a significant amount of discipline. It just does. And, you know, seeing you out there and then seeing you, like I've been around a ton of guys that are masters of their profession, and you can see it. You're part of that, like really small fraction of people that have a ton of discipline. So I think that was one thing I was very in awe of. I was like, just looking at how you're working the entire scenarios throughout those days of hunting, and then looking at you and saying, oh yeah. Like I thought about it multiple times. It's like, if Steve was in the Army, he would have been a Delta Force guy. Like if he was in the Army, he would have been a Delta Force guy.
What would Dirt be?
Like
Delta Force?
Yeah. Dirt would have been with me, just like dragging our knuckles. Like he would have been a machine gunner. He's just like dirty.
Get her
done. He'd have run the little dip booth in the commissary.
Yeah.
Black market, you know, Copenhagen.
Get so laser focused and the pursuit of what you're going for. It doesn't pay the right respect to the term, but it was not only interesting, but man, it gave me a whole new level of kind of what you do as a profession. It does. Like it gives me an entirely different perspective.
No, thank you, man. Touch on real quick before we wrap up, touch on shrimping.
Those things are delicious. They're incredibly delicious. The experience of going out on the water, because I haven't been out on the water a ton. I've spent a little bit of time in the ocean. But going out,
well, you spend a lot of time on rivers.
A lot of time on rivers, not a lot of time in the ocean.
Yeah,
you know, going out and you know, experiencing the ocean with you, understanding that you have much more confidence in the boat and your skills than I do. Confidence in your boat and your skills. It's a joke, fellas. It's me saying I don't. He has a lot more confidence than everybody else in that big water.
Oh, I'm with you now. No, that was a joke.
No, I think it's work too. I can imagine, you know, dumping those pots, and then I kept thinking about the manual process of dragging those things up after you dumped them. Because you're talking about those guys, those old shrimpers pulling those pots up.
Yeah,
and without that assist.
Yeah,
man.
We used to hand pull smaller ones, and it was, you know, it's like recreational, but it gives you sort of a glimpse. It gives you a glimpse into the commercial life,
right?
You get worn out trying to coil those things.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was like, my arms got tired just trying to throw the rope into a perfect circle.
You took to that fast though, Evan. Just filming you guys the shrimping when you guys were in action together, it was like after the first pot. Pulling, it was like,
yeah, we're like Bubba Gump, man.
Yeah. Like, all right,
well, that's what I like about him, because he's like, oh, that's how you do it. He just explains it and then he expects you to know it, like you've been doing it for 10 years. He goes like, around here, through this, and around that, and then you just hit the switch. You good? Okay, we're going, you know, like,
yeah,
what'd you say? Yeah. I don't even know. Are we in the woods or are we on the water? I don't even know where the hell we're at right now.
Yeah,
and no, that entire process was so cool. You know, the shrimping itself and being able to rip those things apart, that's probably one of the most satisfying things outside of, like, you know, pushing in bubble wrap, like tearing shrimp heads apart.
Yeah, it's almost as cool as pop bubble wrap for kids.
Yeah. Seth and I were talking about it. It's like, man, I could do this for a couple hours before I get sick of it. I really could. Because you're like playing game, like, I want to get all of it.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking about how delicious those things are. I don't care how hard it is to lift that.
Yeah, it's
that.
It's called popping heads.
Yeah.
I want to tell people about a thing that we did for cooking that I thought was cool. And I'd honestly never seen it. I didn't know that's how it worked. But you had, what do you call the beans? Green?
Yeah, they're green. Yeah, so they're green beans.
Green coffee beans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from Ethiopia.
And over like a, we have a boiler we use outside to boil, you know, it's like people use them deep fried turkeys.
Mm.
We use it to boil crabs. Big propane fired burner.
On the river, blaster.
The blaster.
A blaster.
Yeah, the blaster.
And took the beans, which look like they're like khaki colored. I don't know.
Yeah.
Tan.
Yeah, tan. Yeah.
You wouldn't look at it. You'd look at it and think you're looking at it's like a, I don't know, like, man. You look at it like a
lentil.
Yeah, like a lentil. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
You think you're looking at a lentil, but it's a coffee bean.
Yep.
And then in a cast iron pan over that outdoor burner, slowly and methodically, over how many minutes do you think it takes?
That one took us a while. It took us 25 minutes, give or take.
Classic cast iron skillet. Turned them into like those glossy dark coffee beans, man.
Yeah.
Not turned them into, but roasted them.
Roasted them. Yeah.
Roasted them over fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then immediately, I know you said it, like ideally you'd let them sit a few days. We didn't do that.
We didn't do it.
Immediately ground them.
Yeah.
And then made like a coffee rub that was just some brown sugar, salt, coffee,
pepper. Yeah.
And I've eaten a lot of, you know, like every time Dick and Harry and the Planet sell some kind of coffee rub, right? You run into it. But man, that tasted like coffee.
Yeah.
That was a good coffee rub. I would suggest people to do that. Get like really, like make it from scratch.
Yeah.
And not with your old ground up shit you got in the cupboard.
Well, you got to make it. If I have one suggestion for guys making coffee rubs out there, which I've made several, is you get a light whole bean coffee and you grind it. You got to use, the reason I say a light roasted coffee is because whatever you're going to put it in, whether it's a pan or an oven or wherever you're going to go, it will cook the coffee more. So if it's already a really dark French roasted coffee or something like that, and it's already been ground, you're not getting the additional layers of taste that you would from a lighter coffee that you have to grind and then put in to your coffee rub that also continues to roast on the meat, because you want it to have a little bit of time on the meat while it's roasting and not burning it into char.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and if you're already on the cusp of burnt.
Yeah, it just turns more burnt, and that's why I think a lot of people don't use a lot of coffee in their coffee rubs, because they haven't been able to put enough coffee in there where it doesn't turn into just really burnt, acidic char. It just doesn't taste very good. Most of the coffee rubs that use a lot of coffee, they don't appeal to me. But if I use a really lightly roasted coffee, freshly grind it before I put it in the rub, that's when it always gets better, because you can taste, to your point, you can taste the coffee in the rub.
Yeah, it was nice. It like tasted light coffee in a very nice way on deer tenderloin. Oh, then there's one last hot coffee tip I want you to give people. When someone asks if you want light, medium, or dark.
Yeah. For the caffeine.
I always thought they were giving you escalating caffeine levels.
Right. That's not true.
Explain that.
Yeah, it's a myth. So,
raise your hand if you in this room. Raise your hand if you thought like I did.
Until when?
You knew?
About caffeine levels?
That light, medium, dark was like increasing caffeine-ness.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought it was all the same caffeine. I just thought like a dark roast is like your real like bitter, strong coffee.
You didn't think it had anything to do with how much caffeine was in there?
No.
I didn't think it was a measurement of caffeine. I just assumed that like the darker it got, the more of it was in there, the more of everything.
Right. And that's not, it's not true. So your lightest coffee, and there's some, there's a white coffee, which is, it's barely roasted, and that has the most caffeine per gram. And then if you go light, medium, dark, it has the most caffeine if you're in a light coffee versus a dark coffee, because as you roast the coffee, you're burning it. So you have less of the intact coffee bean. So you're deconstructing the caffeine as you're burning it. And
you're making smoke and carbon. And
Yeah, exactly. So if you want more caffeine, you need to have a lighter coffee. And it's interesting because a lot of people, they think that. They're like, I want a dark roasted coffee with lots. I want something really strong. Well, it's a strong flavor, but it doesn't have as much caffeine. I drink really light coffees, not because I like the caffeine. It's because I like to taste the coffee itself and not just burnt.
One thing that I have noticed is when I go to my normal coffee spot, I usually get a dark roast from that. And then almost every little cafe that I go to, you know, some mom and pop's Greasy Spoon Cafe, it always seems like a lighter roast coffee at these places because people don't like them super dark. And it seems like I always get way more jittery and like feel more caffeinated at these mom and pop stores. And
it's probably because you're drinking more cups.
No.
Well, it could be two things. Cause there's,
you're talking to a guy that owns a coffee company.
There's two. Well, I'll tell you.
If you
talk
about Chattakit, I'd be like,
well, I don't know if I drink. I was just saying no because I don't know if I drink as many cups.
I'll tell you the reason. So here's the reason why is, less expensive coffee is a Robusta. It's a different strain. There's two main strains.
I see that turn around.
Robusta and Arabica. So if you look at the two main branches, Arabica has, we'll call it 30 to 40% less caffeine than the Robusta, but the Arabica is more expensive. So the Robusta...
Hold on. Hit me again. I want to make sure I memorize this.
So you got two main strains of coffee, Arabica and Robusta.
Okay.
Robusta is less expensive, but it has more caffeine. It's a smaller bean. It's less expensive, and it has more caffeine. Arabica is typically more expensive and has less caffeine. But Arabica, you can get better tastes out of it. So you can increase the profile. So your better coffee shops are typically going to serve an Arabica. Your diners are going to typically serve Arabica or a Robusta. And so that's why you feel more jittery, is because they're using a different caffeine or a different bean.
When you get that?
I think that's pretty cool because I always wonder why. Just like,
that's the reason, because you can buy it in bulk, and a lot of the less expensive coffees that are out there, you're going to buy them in like 5-pound bags, and a lot of the diners are going to go for the less expensive option through a food vendor, and you know that's what they're going to use. And they're not using proper water to coffee ratios either, which is a totally different conversation. But
sure,
we don't need it. We just lost half your podcast.
after Chester does the Chetiquette book,
yeah,
which we still haven't okayed. He's got to go through all the channels,
right?
He's got to get his project greenlit.
Yep,
we haven't greenlit it. But let's say he gets it greenlit.
Okay.
He's going to do that. He's going to go on to have all of his other adventures in life. And then he's going to open a place called Chester's Egg Factory.
Yep.
And it's going to be a breakfast coffee place.
You can serve Black Rifle.
He's going to serve Robusta.
Of course, Black Rifle. Yeah. Then you guys will show up more because he gave you guys
these. We got those free tokens. Dude, don't be telling people about it because I don't want people breaking into my house to take my free token, man.
That's right.
That's a lifetime token.
I see.
Yeah. It's lifetime.
I got to say, too, when the rub you made was when we had the coffee this morning, wrapping up, there was an aha moment of how good that was.
It's really good, right?
Yeah, just because it was so freshly roasted. Yeah. And then one more thing.
Yep.
Something special about the blacktail deer.
Please.
Pleistocene relic.
Oh!
And with we that, saw it.
Yeah.
With that, ladies and gentlemen, join us next time on the Meat Eater Podcast. Thanks, everybody. This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. It is a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that they need and that meets them where they are and helps them get through challenges. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, it's simple to use. You can connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. Hey, if you follow wildlife news at all, you're probably aware that the island of Maui has an incredible abundance of axis deer, so much so that they're causing ecological damage. Well, Maui Nui venison is thinning out some of those axis deer herds and delivering venison sticks and fresh cuts to your door. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. Use promo code MeatEater for 20% off your order.